Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear Blog Talk Radio Program. I'm Susan Larrison-Dans, and today I have to say I am so very honored to have two individuals here together who are going to share some really transformational insights with us about the new energy movement, which is a very vital force in the world right now, and something that many of us feel is part of the shift on this planet. And my two guests are New Energy Movement President Joel Garbin and investigative journalist and researcher Jean Manning. Now, let me just tell you a little bit about these two individuals. Jean is a contributing author to the new anthology, Infinite Energy Technologies. And she and Joel co-authored the award-winning book, Breakthrough Power, How Quantum Leap New Energy Inventions Can Transform Our World. Joel is a founding member of the New Energy Congress, which we will talk to him about. That is a database of promising breakthrough energy technologies. And he's also the author of a historic legislative draft called the Energy Innovation Act of 2007. So he has been very active. Jean has been talking to scientists since the early 1980s, and she's been researching clean energy systems. And you're going to find out today that this really goes beyond the box, so to speak. This goes beyond many of the things that we often hear about related to energy and sustainability. And I know that you're going to enjoy this. Now, before I bring them on the line, I wanted to let you know that there is an open chat room today associated with the show, should you want to comment or ask questions. And you can also learn about the work of the New Energy Movement at newenergymovement.org. Now, one thing I want to say before bringing these two on is that we are engaged in a grassroots exercise. We are going to talk today a little bit about what it means to be grassroots. And I have to say that this show today so much demonstrates my own goal for this radio program, because many of us are just individuals getting up and talking, and that's what Blog Talk Radio is. It is grassroots, and we're going to discover the power of the individual when we join together and just let our voices be heard and learn from one another. So that's our goal today. So without further delay, I'm going to bring them on the line here. It's going to take just a second. Here we go. I am so delighted to welcome you both, Joel Garbin and Jean Manning. See, I already fumbled over my words. Onto the program. I am so happy that you are here.
We're happy to be here, too.
Well, thank you so much.
Great privilege, Susan. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And I have really been learning quite a bit myself, just looking into some of the work that you're involved in. It has great depth, and it also has great approachability, which I think is so important for people to know, because sometimes we get kind of intimidated, don't we, by all these scientific terms if we don't have a scientific background. Now, I happen to have a scientific background, so that's helpful, but these topics are very approachable, aren't they?
Yes, I'm a layperson myself. Joel's a scientist. But I've been writing for newspapers and magazines long enough to translate into everyday language.
Yes. Now, at the outset here, define for us, and I'll let either one of you choose to speak on this, what is new energy, and how do we distinguish it from many of the traditional forms of energy that we hear about so much? What is different about these breakthrough technologies?
These breakthrough technologies don't tap into the standard sources of alternate energy, like the wind and the sun and the heat from the earth and tidal power. Instead, many of them still unexplained as to the theory, but it seems that they're tapping into some background and universal energy source. Joel, do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I think that's an accurate description. I mean, we hear so much about, you know, wind and solar and biofuels and hydroelectric and these other, what we would consider the conventional renewable technologies, but we hear very little about the leading edge frontiers of science in energy technology that are maybe not well understood, but yet have real practical, measurable effects. And, you know, much of the science has been lagging behind the empirical discovery. So, you know, just because we can't yet maybe understand what the source of some of these new energy technologies are, they can be measured. And from the standpoint of their practical application, that's the more important part, is that we can actually apply these things.
Now, I wonder if one of you could address a question that I know is uppermost in many of our minds, is why does it seem, and I say seem, that progress has slowed down? You know, many of us can talk about suppression and things that could have gone on, funding. I mean, I'm putting out some things that I'm sure many of us have talked about. And I wonder if you could reflect upon that some. Is that, where is our hope that we're finally going to break through with these things?
Well, I put my hope in the power of the people getting involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
But I really want to comment on the focus of your show. I really appreciate your theme of getting beyond fear or rising above fear. And fear has held this field back, fear in just practically any sector you can look at. I mean, the inventors kind of go into a fear mode when they find out about the history of a very real suppression. You know, I used to think that this was just a urban myth about the inventors being suppressed, but I have met enough, and Joel has too, many credible scientists and engineers, inventors who have had real experiences. But the times, it can't go on forever that way. It's inevitable that we're going to win.
Yes.
Good will win out. And there's fear coming from the academic community. You know, they hanging on to jobs is really important, more so as times get more extreme financially, and to threaten someone's status as a know-it-all, you know, in other words, expert, causes fear and tension. And politicians, too, I'm learning more as I get to know some of the people that are playing at a higher level in this field, that, you know, they have connections in government and have been told confidentially, look, you know, as I'm in the political realm and I can't be bringing in something that's going to change everything. I mean, that's been spelled out in so many words. So there's just fear, you know, in government they rely on oil revenues, taxes, fuel taxes, and so on to a great degree. And, you know, who among the think tanks has stopped to say, well, this can't go on forever, this situation of polluting the planet by hanging on to fossil fuels. Why don't we figure out a way to base an economy on clean, abundant energy and use the economic benefit of better health for our people and everything to fund our highways and public works through some other means than fuel taxes? I mean, it's not an insoluble problem.
Mm-hmm.
So it has been fear that's held things back in so many sectors. All right, Joel?
Yeah, and I would say that this is not new.
Yeah.
Human beings, we've all had our vested interests, you know, since we learned how to walk and grunt. And, you know, anything that's disruptive to that, you know, causes that fear response. So this goes way deeper than just some type of organized political or corporate maneuvering. It goes to the heart of our experience here as humans and coming from, you know, the ego-based perception of a world of scarcity.
Yeah.
And so this really is a dynamic that goes to the consciousness levels. It's one of the reasons why I'm reluctant to cast a net of calling this or that individual or group the evil ones, you know, for lack of a better word, because something I point out very quickly, look, I've got my own vested interests, and I am vulnerable to feeling the same types of fear and threat when things might threaten my family's material well-being or you know, other things that I think, oh my gosh, you know, I've, you know, put so much of my life into this or that. Do I really want to see it just go by the board because someone has leapfrogged me with something that I consider disruptive? Now, now, as a result, I am very compassionate to the fact that people are afraid of things they don't understand and that they think will require significant change. However, having the awareness that when we come together and we approach this problem with compassion and with a vision that touches all of us and that we all can be a part of crafting this new vision of a world of abundance and peace and health and vitality and creativity, you know, now we can get excited to go, hey, look, let's encourage each other to get past our fear thoughts and step into a new adventure boldly and together and you know, kind of hold hands through this thing so that no one falls through this through the cracks, because there will be disruptions, there will be dislocations that occur as these new energy technologies inevitably come out. So that they will come out soon. That is an inevitability, you know, but we don't have to have it result in chaos. It's something that can be rolled out compassionately with provisions for people who are dislocated. But it does require coordination, cooperation, and it requires the willingness to have that change in consciousness to go from a fear-based view of scarcity to a view of family and hope and shared abundance.
Oh, I like your analogy of holding hands through this thing, Joel. That just really resonates with me because there's this fear of change. And think of other areas where people have to go through a big change or a big disruption in their world. And it's only the families holding hands and the wider nation holding hands that gets people through really huge crises in world history. So if this fear of change, which it all boils down to, you might frame it as a spiritual problem. And then the solution you asked for, Susan, is a spiritual solution, like Joel was saying.
Yes, it's very much based in consciousness. And let me say that is the whole premise behind this frontier that I've talked about, too, is that we have to get beyond survival mode. I don't know how often, you know, so many of our choices, just like you said, Joel, they're influenced by, it's essentially that survival mode that the human race has been in, where scarcity drives us. And fear of scarcity, and you know, it creates so much division. And I have to highlight something that is so important that you said, is that we really are all in this together, and there is a lot of fear out there. I am the sort of person that listens to a variety of sources. There are people who are terrified of things like Agenda 21. And now I don't know how you feel about Agenda 21, but the concept behind it, or you know, this business that getting together in some kind of peaceful quantum leap and really taking this world to a new place is a frightening thing. And I actually understand that because I come from a background which was very conservative, and, you know, I opened up, and yet I can still see that fear of some of those concepts. And you know, how can we really, you know, I think it's going to take spirit working within us all to reassure us that, yes, we are holding hands. I love that analogy. That's a beautiful image that you created.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank
I can
you.
Understand.
I think that you know, one of the key parts of this is knowing that, you know, look, when we enter into a transformative period like is right on our doorstep here, there's a lot of things that are they're unknown. It seems like they're fraught with risk. However, you know, we have as human beings an endowment for the capacity to change and embrace what is new.
Yeah.
And when we, even when we are working within the machinery of agendas that may be counter to thriving,
yes,
if we are spirit-led inside that machinery, we can make those transformations inside the belly of the beast that can turn, you know, something that's kind of an ugly caterpillar into a beautiful butterfly. If everybody tries to point to that ugly caterpillar as, you know, something we have to get away from because it's gobbling up all the greenery in that, and we can't have anything to do with it, nothing will ever change. We'll just continue to be afraid and viewing this thing with enmity. But if we actually are in an intimate relationship with it and help it to transform, and part of that is appealing to the heart of the beast, the working with the mechanism inside it to change it to something that's healthy and holistic and that works for everyone, so it no longer is a parasite, but it's something that works in cooperation and harmony with the whole social and ecological ecosystem. So to me, you know, I often hear people saying, you know, how can you even talk to such and such, who they might name, or this or
yes,
this group,
yes,
or whatever. I hear it all the
uh-huh.
time, and I said I would uh-huh. love to have lunch with that individual, because
uh-huh.
then I'll have a chance to make an appeal to their heart.
Yes. You know, one of the things I have found, and actually one of the goals for this show is to start bringing on really divergent viewpoints, and more and more so that people can get it out. And say, you know what, we really can talk to each other, can't we? We don't have to walk into it agreeing. But, you know, you often find that people on the opposite side are seemingly, they want to have a dialogue with you as much as you want to have a dialogue with them. Isn't that true?
It is. I really am glad that you're focusing on that, because I remember back in the 90s, there were a couple of women in California that put out a magazine for a while. I believe it was called Perceptions, and their aim was to bring together the so-called left and so-called right, you know, the liberals and the conservatives and the green and the people that thought that they were opposed to anything to do
yeah.
with the environment, which is sustaining us all. And unfortunately, they didn't have the funding to keep going more than a year, but I sure applaud such efforts like you're doing. And it's, I'm on a variety of send lists too. One of them is an environmental update every day, and you can see how words are framed, and the words that they use on their site are considered by another people who see themselves as opposed as radical politically correct or whatever, whereas the people in this very self-consciously, ecologically conscientious community, which I consider we're all part of that, whether we acknowledge it or not. Anyway, they see the words from the so-called right as something that closes doors to their thinking, whereas really underlying it all, everybody wants a better future for their children and grandchildren, and even the so-called climate issue you've got evangelical Christians who support that really in action, and because they consider environmental degradation as desecrating the world God created.
Yes.
And so being stewards of the earth is doesn't have to be framed as something that's either left or right. So the more that we can focus on what we all have in common and what's important to us in our hearts as people, that's the way we'll be holding hands together, I think.
Yeah, it seems like listening is so important that, you know, go ahead and talk about, you know, I talk about the whole climate change issue. You know, we immediately, and we're not even get into this initially. I have a feeling this time is going to go by so fast. But it's just, why not just talk? You know, instead of people just saying, you know, that's totally insane or whatever. You know, I've heard some really interesting theories that it's a combination of factors, that other planets show evidence of heating up as well, for example, in our solar system. Well, that may be. That may be part of it. But is that the only part, you know? And why can't we have these conversations in a place where it's safe and where you can have alternative viewpoints and just have a discussion? That's what I'd like to see.
Right. So rather than focusing on something that's controversial, like whether it's solar or what are other influences that are heating up the earth, but rather, hey, don't we all want to breathe clean air?
Yeah.
And don't we all
yes.
want to have water sources that aren't polluted by fracking for natural gas or,
yes.
or radioactive spills? I mean, these are all vital to the life support systems of supporting all of us. So if that's what we can focus on rather than getting down to debates over carbon taxes or those secondary issues. You know,
right.
You think
and
if
the climate
somebody was trying
change,
to manipulate,
yeah.
that's what they would focus on. You know?
Yeah, they become albatrosses around our
yeah.
necks. I mean,
divide
we just,
and
we're
conquer.
Stuck. Yes, we're stuck in that, and then you can't see the problem. So I guess, you know, here we are well into the show, and you know what? It's time to really talk about some of these technologies. So I'll leave it open to, you know, maybe Joel, you can start to talk about some or tell me, you know, as best you can in a summary, how, what historically has happened and those things that we may not fully know about our own history of inventions. And so why don't you start there with some of the history of these technologies?
Well, I think Gene is the best first to provide some of the history.
That's fine. Whoever
wants
to start.
Then I'll be happy to comment on some of the present
Great.
Day developments.
Okay. Well, throughout the last more than 100 years, there have been individuals who've risen up and said, "Look, I have something that's it's generating, or actually, a more accurate word, converting energy from some previously unknown source, and it's enough output that potentially could be made into something that's going to provide for our heating and transportation and on our other needs. I mean, in modern times, we've got the cooling and electricity and the electricity for electronics that we consider basic needs. But I'm starting back even before the famous inventor Nikola Tesla.
Yes.
There was John Worrell Keeley, who was framed in history as not having what he said he had, but those who really thoroughly researched John Keeley say that, yes, he really was dealing with something that's called the science of sympathetic vibratory physics, and he could use sound effect from sound to manipulate what's going on in his devices, and
mm-hmm.
you know, the principle of resonance. Anybody at all familiar with music knows that resonance means that one thing responds to the vibrations of another, like, you know, a chord on a piano or a guitar across the room from another instrument, and the other
yes.
instrument vibrates to it.
Mm-hmm.
So really simple concepts that we people can understand. We don't have to understand quantum physics, but so these were geniuses from the past, or maybe tinkerers in some cases who are not exactly geniuses but happen to stumble upon some effect and manage to improve it to the point where they had a prototype to work with. But if they didn't understand how their magnetic differently configured generator was actually putting out more power than the electrical input power, then it wasn't repeated because it wasn't really understood.
Yes.
But one of the pioneers that I'm most excited about his concepts are Victor Schauberger, looking to nature for nature's movements, teaching us how to go about looking at energy in a different way, because in nature there's this common motion of swirling three-dimensional spiral called a vortex.
Yes.
And that's the form of motion that background space seems to prefer. And so his whole outlook is just a whole beautiful structure of understanding nature and then turning some of that understanding into technologies that, like his home power generator, generated electricity. But he worked with either water or air as the medium for his unusual inventions.
Yes.
And so there were, you know, our book has a whole section on the history. And today, you know, Joel can bring us up to date on today, but just understanding that things are possible if one considers that perhaps there is this background energy of the universe that in one way or another, either accidentally or having some understanding like Nikola Tesla's concepts, that that some of these pioneers were able to tap into that background energy of the universe. And they
did. It seems like Tesla is the one that comes up the most in, you know, for lay people, we hear about Tesla the most and how that was essentially suppressed. I mean, that seems to be we chose a different path. And that's so often the case in inventions, isn't it, where some force goes beyond the alternative, it's behind the alternative. And I know there's a story, I know it's in one of your books, about how it had to do with copper and or maybe I heard it on Coast to Coast when Joel
power.
Was on there. Yeah, well,
we talked
that,
about how
yeah.
the copper mines were bought up so that we could
right.
so that the J.P. Morgans of the world could string
That's
copper
it.
Wires across the continent instead of having a Tesla technology, which it's quite misunderstood when people just use the words that he had, you know, wireless transmission of electricity, because he wasn't doing what these wireless technologies are doing today with regular electromagnetic 60 cycle energy power. I mean, he was again using the principles of resonance and one part of his system in tune with another to pick up what he was transmitting, so it wasn't, you know, beaming electricity out over
yes.
the atmosphere, which goes by the laws of electrical theory, and there are limits to it. But he was far beyond that, and he was tapping into this background energy. He called it radiant energy. It's some have called it ether. Some today are calling it zero-point energy. Goes by different names. But he possessed advanced abilities, so he really had access to inspiration beyond,
yeah.
beyond the physical.
You know, something I was reflecting upon, kind of reflecting through your comments, Joel, about, you know, not being divisive, even in the past when you look at it, you know, it's easy to say, oh, look, this was manipulated or that was manipulated. And yet, isn't it just human nature that, you know, we chose a certain path that, you know, maybe the copper industry was part of it, whatever, but that it wasn't necessarily some vast conspiracy. It was just the way human beings operate within scarcity. Everyone is trying to make abundance in their own way to keep them safe, essentially sustain themselves, and they go down a certain path. Is that true, Joel? Am I seeing history to a point that way correctly?
It is. There's, you know, it doesn't take something that's a big scientific advance that leapfrogs everything prior to be the type of development that causes manipulation of markets and behaviors and all that
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. I mean, it can be in very mundane things. I mean, if you just kind of look around at the whole world of commerce, you know, every day there are things that are going on in business where, you know, large businesses acquire smaller businesses in order to reduce their costs and redundancy and improve their bottom line and driving
yeah.
toward profit. Our economic model here for any corporation has the fundamental mandate to increase profit. That
mm-hmm.
is why the corporation exists. So that behavior really does not necessarily have any intention to drive innovation. It's
yeah.
because what drives profit may, in the case of oil, mean that you form cartels.
Yeah.
Okay? So
mm-hmm.
and that really doesn't necessarily mean that the original intention was to keep vast new innovation at bay, but rather to simply maximize profit. And that happens in a lot of different mundane realms of commerce as well. Now uniquely though, when you examine all the technological developments that we have experienced here over the last few decades, whether it's been in telecommunications, where everyone has, you know, the 10th generation, you know, cell phone, whether it's in computing and everyone has a 10th generation laptop, whether it's in medical imaging technology, so you can go get an
yeah.
MRI or some other type of imaging scan to help with the diagnostic process. On and on. We got all these things. We got nanotechnology going on. We got space exploration and all its implications. So all these other areas of technology have advanced dramatically, yet we're still primarily burning coal to generate electricity on this planet. And that does have aspects of intentionality there. It's
yes.
and again, it's because the cartel mentality is very much in the public's face here. We all know it. We have an OPEC, right? And
yes.
and that's monopolistic behavior. And we
mm-hmm.
have a lot of the multinational energy corporations have so much reach and political power into the extractive industries, whether it's coal or minerals or oil and gas or whatever. Those are huge infrastructures of equipment, of invested capital, of employed people, of business interests, of large institutional investors, stock funds, 401ks, what have you, all have
yes.
a piece in that pie. And that's a huge dinosaur to get to turn around. And so many of these things aren't as much about conspiracy as they are about the very complex dynamic that's in place, along with these behaviors that really are trying to maximize profit even when it's in the face of what's in the interest of the well-being of the planet and its people. So you know, the conspiracy part of it, yes, it happens. Has
it
there been suppression?
Happen.
Yes, there
mm-hmm.
has. But it is not Gene or my focus on that.
Right.
We are about, okay, let's maturely look at what has
right.
happened. Let's be aware as adults about what's going on. But now let's make a new choice for healing, and let's examine how we can best bring that about. And some of the new technologies that I can discuss here briefly will help point us in that direction. And but there's we got to get kind of by the whole conspiracy aspect of it first.
Yeah, I think that's really very healthy to have an awareness, and it's a balanced view that you take. And you have an awareness that some things have gone on, but it's really very complex. And I feel that's so true in many of the things that divide us, is that they're far more complex
than the stories that we tell ourselves on the surface. You know, there are these buzzwords. I mean, it's all over the place, these things. And there often are. They're just kind of these stories that are just surface stories, and they don't cover all the angles, which are complex. So, you know, I really applaud you both for that because it's so important. Now, tell me, Joel, or again, either one of you can answer these questions, so just pick them up as you see fit. Now, getting into, you know, we will come to the current day and how we're fostering this, but before we do, just a little more deeply some of these technologies. For example, cold fusion. Could someone pick up on cold fusion, which is something many of us know about? Even, you know, lay people heard all about cold fusion some years ago. What's going on with that?
Do you want me to start, Joel?
Yeah, go ahead, Jean, please.
Okay. It's different from fission, of course, when you split atoms into smaller elements. We know about every power reactor, commercial reactor, nuclear. And it's not hot fusion. You know, the scientists that are trying to smash hydrogen atoms in together,
right,
together so that they just join up into larger elements, that, like, is considered as powering the sun. So what some of the scientists involved in the LENR field, which is low energy nuclear reactions, they're using common stable elements like nickel and carbon and hydrogen to produce stable products like copper or hydrogen or nitrogen, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And then heat and electricity come along with that. The whole field is in the process of figuring out who they are. You know, it's an identity crisis in the what started off being misnamed cold fusion field. And even this title, low-energy nuclear reactions, is not accepted by all of them because there's a question, well, is it even nuclear? And I really would prefer the initials that are used by one company, the heat energy from nuclei interactions. In other words, the nuclei of atoms are involved, but it's not nuclear physics as is understood, which has the nasty byproducts of radioactive messes.
Right.
But instead, there's something going on in these cells where we put in, say, powdered nickel and inject hydrogen and maybe a few catalysts and then come out with this amazing amount of excess heat. So there's something else happening that they're still struggling to agree on what's going on in there. But
yeah,
like Joel said, it's not necessary to have something theoretically understood. Let's just go ahead and develop the product. A lot of the scientists in that field are kind of sidetracked by trying to convince the hot fusion community that this new upstart has something real, and then the hot fusion scientists don't want to admit it because it doesn't follow their rules. You know, there isn't the radiation, the byproducts that they expect. But it isn't even that young a field anymore. It's 20 some years old, since 1989, when Stanley Pons and Martin Fleischmann announced that they had the table talk reactor. And so after 20 some years, we have your old guard in that field already who are kind of resisting change with the upstarts that are coming along and saying, well, it's not nuclear. But for my sake of trying to bridge to people in all communities, including the environmental community, I would love to see that word out, you know, because it's just a stumbling block when you try to tell people that, hey, there's a clean source of power that could be developed to answer our problems, and it's called low-energy nuclear reactions. And then
right,
they tune out at that word nuclear.
Right. That's right, because people are frightened. And especially now, after Fukushima and everything, people are very skittish about, they don't understand. I mean, there's just not a depth of understanding over the differences within the lay community. But I do think people really did have an awareness of this. I remember it very well in the 80s. And people wonder, you know, what in the heck happened with it. So I know we can't go too deeply into each one because we will run out of time. But I'll give you a moment to talk about, you know, another technology. I know that Joel had talked about something really interesting. I think it was when you were talking to George Norrie, and it may be in your book too. One thing I liked about this, the schoolgirl motor, and I liked this story because it both represented a technology and it also had to do with an approach to how you share technology. So I wonder if you could get into that.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a one branch of these new energy technologies is called magnetic motors, which basically is using a novel array of magnets, permanent magnets, in a rotary configuration to essentially produce more output electricity than what's required to apparently initiate the process. Now, that doesn't mean that we're creating energy. It simply means that there might be a form of energy that's entering the process or is being transformed that's not as easily measured as the very well-recognized electrical output or thermal output or light, these type of things that are easily measured and very very common. And also, I would say mechanical power, so motion.
Yeah.
Of some sort, you know, all those things are easily evaluated. Now, one of the researchers, John Bedini, who's well known, he lives over in Idaho, and for quite a few years has been hosting workshops at a conference there. That actually, there's one upcoming at the end of June that Gene will be attending. Gene, I think the dates of that, is it like June 28, I believe?
It's the last weekend in June. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at least last weekend in June. You know, they'll be talking about these types of technologies that John Bedini and one of his close colleagues, Peter Lindemann, had developed and worked on for years. And one variant of this is what is called the schoolgirl motor, SG motor. And the whole premise here is that, look, this is not so complicated that it's beyond people who have no formal technical training. In fact, as John Bedini would say, it's so simple that a schoolgirl could build it, which, in fact, is exactly what happened. And we profile the story of this 9-year-old girl who put together this motor and demonstrated it and won the, you know, science awards that, you know, she presented in her schools. And, you know, it's a very inspiring story, but also proves the point that, look, even though we don't necessarily understand what the underlying theoretical principles are, we can make practical devices that can do some things that have a social benefit. And that's that's really the issue at hand here. Save you know, all the theoretical stuff for the scientists who want to debate that for decades and decades into the future. But for the ones who really want to address the problems at large, you know, let's start getting solutions in hand.
Yeah.
Using them if they have practical beneficial effects and if they're safe and if they, you know, provide some other benefits, you know, let's move ahead with that. So you know, the Bedini magnetic motor technology does some really neat things. For instance, if you have a battery that initiates the front end of the reaction, so a front end battery, it will cause the motor to turn, and there's mechanical power generated from the motion itself, and then there's output energy that will charge a downstream battery faster than the upstream battery is discharged. So clearly there is excess energy being provided in this system, and produces some mechanical power at the same time. And that's something that John and Peter Lindemann, you know, they teach other people how to do this. What they're trying to do is plant seeds among the enthusiast community to to spawn more research, more interest, get more people involved at the grassroots level with hands-on work. And it's great. It's not just, hey, buy a device from me. It's let us teach you how to do this. And it's just awesome. And Gene has been a regular at these annual conferences, and people are delighted when they get a chance to meet her and hear her speak. And so that's a really, really good example of one of these technology domains, the magnetic motors. I wanted to mention something else here too. You know, Gene had mentioned on the nickel and hydrogen type of technologies that have, you know, were generally known in this cold fusion class, but now are, you know, they're trying to find a term that's more appropriate for this. The neat thing is these devices work, and there's several variants of these. There's several companies that have sprung up around these, both here in the U.S. and on the international scene. So there's companies based out of Italy, out of Greece, now located to Canada. Got two U.S. companies, including one out of Berkeley called Brillouin Energy. There's another one called Lenuco that was founded by a former University of Illinois physicist, George Miley. So these things aren't just out there in the concept stage. There's real technology that can take common elements. There's a novel reaction that occurs. It's very robust and repeatable, and it produces a large excess of thermal energy. And why that's important is that using a device like this to heat water can really have a huge impact on the energy footprint of this planet. So much of the fossil energy and the nuclear power that's used on this planet is used simply to heat water. If you look at the electricity generation process, what you're essentially doing is you're taking a fuel, you're burning it, whether it's a hydrocarbon like coal or gas or oil, or if you're burning a nuclear fuel like uranium or plutonium, what you're doing in those reactions, you're trying to generate heat, to boil water, to convert it to steam, to power a turbine, to produce electricity. But basically what you're doing is you're heating water. It's no different if you're in your house. You've got a hot water heater. You got your coffee maker. If you're in an industrial setting, you have your boiler for your operations and industry and all this. Huge amount of energy used to boil water. So this type of process, the nickel hydrogen process, will have great utility in displacing these polluting fuels using something that's has a much smaller footprint, much more conservative on the materials required, and much safer from the standpoint of human health and the environment.
Yes.
And another way to heat water in strange ways, along the lines of what Victor Schauberger talked about, implosion rather than explosion. In other words, inward spiraling rather than burning and exploding. There was a man in Georgia who his business involved solving problems for industries like water hammer, which, you know, in everyday household, if you ever lived in an old house where suddenly the pipes start making huge noise, it's called water hammer. If somebody turns off a faucet suddenly and then it creates a vacuum inside of a pipe and then the pipes just go crazy shaking. Well, he eventually looked at this and realized that the heat was generated in these shock waves, and so he decided to turn this to good use. And so these changes of pressure led him to researching for a new source of heating, and he made these industrial size boilers based on that concept. But the interesting thing, when I was thinking about your getting beyond fear, when I was kind of flipping back through some of what I've written for Infinite Energy, and I ran across this bit about water hammer, and I could see it as an analogy to the out-of-control resistance to change in society.
Yes.
And so if he, you know, what he did was harness that force rather than just bewail how terrible it was, you know, ain't it awful. Instead, he said, well, how can we put this energy to use? So maybe the excess disruption that we have in our times can be channeled into putting that energy together, holding hands, into a more beneficial direction.
Yes, absolutely. And Joel, I definitely want to give you an opportunity to talk about what is the new energy movement doing now to foster that kind of creative process. Tell us a little bit more about the nonprofit. And I know you're involved to a degree too, Jean, in this nonprofit. Tell me more. What are you doing with this to foster these things?
Well, New Energy Movement, it is a nonprofit. It's a public charity that relies on the public to support its efforts to educate the mainstream public and the media and the science community and investment community about what's going on behind the scenes in breakthrough energy technologies, and to generate support for the broad and urgent development of these technologies, embracing what's going on in the workshops and lab spaces of these pioneering inventors, so that we can more, you know, kind of blaze a path for the emergence of these potent new clean energy technologies. So what we do is we form relationships with the inventor community. We have a large network of inventors and scientists who provide us information on what's going on in their research. And what we do is we help to translate those technical developments into more easily understood principles and implications, maybe more importantly, for the mainstream non-technical public. And so you don't need to know all the ins and outs of the technical stuff as much as you really need to be aware of why we are all stakeholders in the outcome of this whole venture. So we try to be a conduit between the inventing community and the public at large, and we try to bring together parties that can actually bring material help to the inventor community as well. It might be resources in the way of engineering talent or capital, might be volunteers who can do various things to help advance this. Most of the inventors themselves are great in their art, and they are artists and are very creative that way. However, generally as a class, they have little business acumen as far as what's required to take an inventive idea out into a commercial device that goes into the marketplace and public domain. And as an inventor myself, and having worked from the concept stage of the idea all the way through to a commercial embodiment and then launching a very successful product into the marketplace, it's something that takes quite a bit of time, takes quite a bit of money, and takes a talented team of people who can work together well, who understand their roles and coordinate it into a very high performance team, I guess is the best way to say it. So we're looking for ways to help expedite the emergence of these technologies. Now, New Energy Movement, primarily to this point in time, we've been focused on this educational aspect. And that's where the importance of the book that Jean invited me to collaborate with her, and that's the Breakthrough Power book. This has served as our flagship education tool. It's written for the mainstream public. It's won a lot of critical acclaim because it's very accessible. Now, going to the next step, what we're focused on right now is getting a set. We're moving more into the vetting and verification of technology phase in this whole movement. And along with that, what we've recognized is that as we've had colleagues go and make investigations to verify the performance claims of various inventors and their technologies,
yes,
by and large, more than 90% of those claims have been found to be invalid. And
yes,
it's generally because of a combination of poor understanding of the science involved, or perhaps improper use of instrumentation for measurements, or misinterpretation of the results from those measurements. And in some cases, it's been outright intention to deceive and perpetrate
uh-huh.
fraud. But
mm-hmm.
but the long and short of it is that the vast majority of these performance claims have not been accurate, and it's resulted in a huge investment of time and money and resources from those who've gone to investigate, and they never, you know, it didn't merit that expenditure of effort and resources. So what we're intending to develop now are some standardized protocols for testing that will be developed by very credentialed people in the fields of electrical engineering and chemistry and other related fields to energy, where we essentially develop this cookbook of protocols that will be open sourced to the inventor community, with
yes.
the understanding that if they derive their performance claims for their invention using these rigorous protocols, then we can more readily bring the vetting teams to them who will use those exact same protocols to provide a third-party verification and a certification. And with such a third-party verification, that is what they can use to high leverage to bring in capital to help advance the technology to the marketplace. So that's what one thing that we're focusing right now. And you know, it's exciting because it shows we're you know, entering into this new phase that is very much needed right now.
Yes, you know, something I really wanted to highlight, because I think I've seen both of you speak of this concept of open source. And you know, I come from a computer science background. I have an MS in computer science, and there is within the creative community, and I witnessed this in computer science, this willingness to just participate in the pure joy of creativity is what it is. It's as if the barriers of competitiveness can drop to a degree. I mean, it's hard to let go of that to some degree. People are competitive in their ventures. But what I've witnessed just within computer science is what these magical things that can happen when you let go of some of that, which is very ego, or if we want to bring it back to spirit, and somehow tap into that collaborative, co-creative consciousness. And so I sense that is very much a part of what you're doing, which is very powerful. I mean, that's part of the quantum leap that we're creating. And am I seeing that correctly? Because I've certainly seen it in the computer
yes.
science world.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
I love that co-creative consciousness.
Yes, yes. And you know, I was collaborating with someone else the other day who had a PhD, and we actually came up with that idea. We were discussing this whole, it's really synchronistic that this would come up right now, because another guest of the show, well, you know, when once you're a guest on the show, we generally aren't done. That tends to be the case. We tend to keep talking. Which is great. I love talking to the people who've been on the show, and it's just so interesting the things that we come up with. Yes, there is this co-creative consciousness where people are letting go of their egos, and they are just holding hands together, to use Joel's term, to take us to the next level, because we all benefit.
Oh, and I tell you, this so needs collaboration,
mm-hmm.
Susan. It's
mm-hmm.
it's not a one man or one woman show or you know, or a small team. This is why
exactly.
you know, New Energy Movement is a grassroots organization. It's meant to tap into the energy, vitality, the creativity of the global citizenry, and we very much are dependent on the material support of that community to help us move this along. You know,
yeah.
I use as a for instance here the development of these protocols. You know, we need to have teams of credentialed professionals come together and as technical committees to develop these. And all of these people generally are very busy and you know, their other professional pursuits. And what we recognize is we need to be able to provide some stipends,
yes,
you know, for their participation
on
these committees.
Let me interrupt you for just a second, Joel.
Sure.
We're coming to the end of the live broadcast. It will continue into the podcast. I'll hold you over for a few minutes. But people need to go to newenergymovement.org. Or if you want to continue listening to us, if you're live, you can call into the teleconference line right now. 310-807-5104, and you can continue to listen to us live. Okay, continue.
Yeah, so the point being is that, you know, we do, in order for this to be an efficient process to develop these protocols, we do need funding to be able to provide those technical committees, you know, the ability to gather together,
right,
and provide for the time that they're putting in. It'd be nice if all these things just came together as a voluntary effort, but I
yes.
know from practical experience in serving on protocol development committees in the water treatment field, which
mm-hmm.
I do both in the United States and Canada, that when they're voluntary efforts, although well-intentioned, the time that it takes to actually get meaningful developments is very protracted. It takes a long time because you don't have the ability to provide people you know, some compensation to actually get where they need
yes.
to get, essentially compensate for the time they're dedicating. So we need to accelerate this. It's a very important, high-priority agenda item for a New Energy Movement, and really welcome the support from the public. You know, we are a 501c3 nonprofit, so the contributions are tax-deductible.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that we feel is pivotal to help us not only provide these rigorous protocols to the inventor community, but it will result in a much more concentrated, it will be a smaller, more concentrated stream of technologies of merit that come to our attention now, instead of this huge array of you know, a kind of a dog's breakfast of various different things that
yeah.
are very difficult to wade through and end up squandering a lot of time and resources. So we're enthusiastic about this initiative, and we definitely ask for your listener support.
Yes, well, I think it's a wonderful effort that you're engaged in, and the more that people explore what you're up to, I mean, it's very much a worldwide partnership, and you've got some amazing partners coming into this from, you know, from the Thrive Movement. I see that you've been talking with them, and I know a lot of my listeners have some awareness of that. And you know, even the new Sirius movie, which gets us a little farther out on the fringe, but we're not afraid of the fringe on the frontier beyond fear, because that word fringe is often misused. And I know that
right.
there's just this broad community of free thinkers that you're networking in with, isn't that true?
Well, you know, Foster and Kimberly Gamble behind the Thrive Movement, they are highly supportive of New Energy Movement.
Yes.
You know, which is, you know, they consider the energy piece of the solutions, the Thrive Solutions, is the critical central piece in this, because it reaches into all these other social, geopolitical, and environmental you know, issues on our planet. And also the folks behind the new Sirius documentary, Dr. Stephen Greer
mm-hmm.
and his colleagues, we've collaborated for many, many years on the energy parts of the implications of his research.
Yeah.
You know, into the whole, you know, aerial anomalies and you know, the whole concept of whether, you know, other intelligent races have been interacting here with Earth humanity.
Yeah.
And there's tremendous evidence that
yeah.
there are advanced energy and propulsion technologies that could be available to benefit you know, Earth humanity and be used to help remediate so many of the problems we have here on the planet. But anyway, we have a broad range of alliances with
yes,
various people who are playing their role to help transform our world into something that works for everyone.
Yes, and I appreciate that. And by the way, I use that word fringe very lovingly. In fact, I've often thought the fringe is the most decorative part of a garment. You know, I mean, it's the most, it's where it really gets interesting. And so, and I am deeply interested in, I feel it's just logical. You know, we become so afraid of some of these concepts because of what we've been taught in the conventional world. And yet, if you just use your logic, I mean, it's very egocentric to think of us on this planet as all alone and even to think that there might not be races out there with advanced capabilities, both in technology and consciousness. And so I think it's just logical. It doesn't have to be some way out there idea. And I appreciate that you do have these broad alliances. So I don't want to hold you too much because I know you have busy schedules, because this topic could go for a very long time. I mean, I've just been so happy to have you here on the broadcast. It has been a privilege to talk to you.
I've certainly enjoyed talking with somebody with a more advanced understanding like you have, Susan.
Yeah.
Oh, it's been
great. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you. And you know, more scientists are waking up. You know, sometimes even with what I'm doing, I think, oh, gosh, you know, there are people listening. They're thinking, oh, listen to Susan. She's gone off the deep end. Because even within the computer science community, we can be, you know, skittish about these things. But we've got to let go of it. We've got to let go of those things that are holding us back, our fear of judgment.
Oh, that's
Susan, I can definitely say that many of those in the mainstream science community who publicly would keep their lips pressed sealed if asked their opinions about some of these anomalies, in private will confide that, yes, they follow it closely, and they have opinions that it's real. And they're very interested, although they feel they have their own fear of being ridiculed within their own professional circles. And the most recent example of this was the research and development manager of a laboratory for a very large international chip maker, computer chip maker.
I can imagine.
Just had this conversation
yeah.
with me about 4 days ago. So
as
you say, there are a lot more people in the science community waking up to these things.
Yeah, and they're probably secretly applauding. And I can't help but say this thing. I've been meaning to say this for a while, and this is the perfect opportunity, is all my life I have been around, you know, what might be called the geek community. And I was one of the only women when I started out, and actually it was true all the way through. But it didn't matter. I love these people. And do you know what they're all into, almost all of them? Science fiction and fantasy novels. They love it. Mm. It is their dream come true. And if the world could actually be what they have been, you know, this is their hobby, and maybe they view it as a hobby. Deep down, Joel and Jean, these people, the scientists, they want to believe. They do, and I know this. I know this for a fact. And when they can discover that the world is much more remarkable than they realize, and that it's much like what they viewed as these hopeful things that they've been into since childhood, it'll be like the dearest dreams of their heart coming true. And I cannot wait for that day. Certain people that I know who will just be thrilled to know what the reality of the world actually is. And I know this will happen.
Well,
I know it will.
We hope to make the social environment a safer space for people to discuss these things openly and matter-of-factly without fear of ridicule or persecution in any form, because that is holding back so much of the momentum that could otherwise be directed toward breakthroughs.
Absolutely. And it's key to this entire quantum leap. It takes courage. I mean, we're talking, you know, again, back to this show about fear. It does take a certain amount of courage. But once you cross over that threshold, you are free. When you can really openly talk about the things that deep down you begin to believe are true. And as you say, there are people who, you know, secretly will say things, and they're following us. I mean, these are all part of humanity. Everybody, we may be more on the same team than we realize. It's just some people are secretly cheering, and they can't say that they really are. And so it's a really cool thing happening on the planet right now. And and once again, I am so delighted that you have both been here today. Thank you for coming to this show.
Great. Take care.
All right. Well, you both take care. And again, newenergymovement.org is the place to go if you want a starting point. And I'll probably post some more links as well.
And breakthroughpower.net.
And breakthroughpower.net. That's right. I'll be sure to make sure that we have a few links on the on the show page that people can go to. So, again, thank you both, and take care, and I wish you well, and it'll be really interesting to follow where you take all of this next, because it's an exciting time.
Well, thanks. It's
a
joy to
Susan,
talk with you.
Yes, peace all to
right.
your audience.
Yes, thank you. Peace to you.
Bye-bye.
And with that said, I'm going to just put in a couple show notes here just for the upcoming episodes. The next show will be Thursday, May 9th at 12 noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. Barbara Shacker will be here. She's going to talk about the new book, Global Awakening, New Science, and the 21st Century Enlightenment. So I know that's going to be a topic that's going to interest the same audience that has been enjoying this show. And I know that a lot of people are coming to these topics. You don't have to have a scientific background. Just like we said at the very beginning, these are approachable topics, and these are really fascinating aspects of our current reality and where we're headed. And, you know, we're all in this together. And if we can leverage the brilliance of our scientists and join that with the expansion of our consciousness, which is what's going on. It's what we see in movies like What the Bleep Do We Know, for example. We are starting to leverage that. It does take courage, but the spiritual breakthroughs that occur, they give you the courage. And so that's where we're heading. And it's a wonderful time to be living on what I like to call the frontier beyond fear. And if you want to learn more about the frontier, just visit frontierbeyondfear.com. All of the archive is there, as well as ways you can support this program if you feel so led, because I think that we can all join together in what is really a very exciting, positive, hopeful reality for this world. Thank you, everyone. And as Joel says, I wish you all peace. Peace to our guests today and peace to the audience. Thank you again.